And as I promised before that cut of music, we have two guests in the studio with us. Two friends of the McDonnell Williamson House in Point Fortune, John Redfern and George Henderson. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in today to meet with us and have a chat about this wonderful historic site, a national treasure. You're both co-presidents of the Friends of the McDo House. John, you're from the Quebec side. Is that right?
That's right.
And George, you're the you represent the Ontario Friends of the House.
That's
correct. That's cool. Tell us what's been going on at the house. I don't know where we want to start. I guess, John, you were a member of the family, the last residents of the house. I think that's a fascinating.
Maybe the start is just, if you take the image of somebody that's 5 to 10 years old, we were living in Ottawa at the time. We'd come down to Point Fortune in the summer on Colonial Coach or by car, where at those days you had to have 2 or 3 flat tires because of the tires after the war. You take the train to Rigo, bicycle back. But we call this house our cottage. That's about, George, 60 by 48
or something like that,
with a ballroom and three stories, and we called a cottage. And although we'd come down, there'd be swords in the wall, there was muskets in the alley, there was military uniforms and furniture. It's really a house built in 1817 and refurbished in 1892.
But a young boy's dream, wouldn't it be?
Well, and imagine how big it looked when you're 5 to 10.
Yeah, a castle.
And right beside the Ottawa River, and you fished in the river, and you swam in the river, and you went down and got fresh bread every day in the post office. But we figured this was typical house.
Sounds pretty idyllic to me.
but it's, and of course, the fact is that it's had two owners, and two owners that represent really the two major industries of the time, the fur trade with the McDonnells and then the lumbering industry with the Williamsons.
Yes.
And you could go into the cupboards and see letters that said, coming from England, saying, oh, you're in Canada, would you drop in and send this to somebody? I think he's in Pennsylvania. That kind of geographic knowledge.
Yeah.
It was only when you get older and think back of, this tie to the industries, this tie to the Empire Loyalists.
And what you were actually seeing in the cupboards and on the walls was thick pieces of history.
I would think most of the furniture would have been put in the late 1800s when the Williamsons came in, and it would be typical of that time. And you went down sort of 800 feet from the house, and there's the marker that says Upper Canada on one side and Lower Canada on the other side.
Yes, so, I've seen that marker. That's historic in and of itself, right? That's the dividing line between Upper and Lower Canada.
That's right. And I guess there's one every mile between the Ottawa River and the St. Lawrence.
Okay. Yeah, the line goes right down there.
There's still a lot of them.
Yeah, really interesting. Now, was it always a residence, or was it actually a headquarters for the fur trading company? I guess, was Northwest Company?
Well, it was always a residence for two families, but in those days, if you had a business or you had a position, the people who were in charge of things were into everything. You would be a justice of the peace, you'd be involved in the militia, you'd have your residence, you'd have a store, but had a store operating out of it. Originally, there was even a small canal bypassing the rapids there, and there was a sort of a forwarding business where people would come up the river from Montreal or what have you, then be taken overland to the other side of the dam.
So, was the canal on the Ontario side or the
Quebec side? There was a small canal on the Ontario side until they built the one on the other side.
Okay.
Now, when I was younger and looking out, they were still tugging barges, bringing stuff up between Ottawa and Montreal.
Really?
And that was quite common.
Yes. Yeah. And it was obviously predated the dam, the Carillon Dam.
It predated the latest one, but there was a dam there before that.
Ah, okay.
Sort of a lower wooden one, and the powerhouse was on this side.
Oh, I didn't realize that. There's
some pictures in the house showing. It had about a 10 to 15 foot head.
Okay.
But it was eventually owned by Schwenningen Power and Light, that's
until,
around the time.
Until it was nationalized.
Mothballed it.
Oh, yeah?
But it was perfect fishing, and the good fishing was just below the dam. So
Oh, yes. Still is, I think.
You see lots of fishermen.
And you had the spring shad run, and then you had you would never think of going fishing without catching stuff. I mean, you could get black pickle, red pickle, dory, or walleye pike, as they call them, pike, mud pout, channel cat, whitefish, smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, sturgeon.
Really?
Sturgeon. Yeah. Of course, the interesting thing about sturgeon, I think if they're not over 42 inches, you got to throw them back in. So you get a fish this big, and
huge.
You say, yeah, not big enough to throw. The keep.
Yeah. It's interesting. We just had the Maysho Festival here in Bankley Kill on Main Street, and there was a couple selling smoked sturgeon from St. Eugene. So I'm wondering if they're still pulling it out of the Ottawa River.
Yeah, there's still sturgeon there.
Yeah, I guess. Hey? Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to ask them if they throw the ones under 42 inches back in again.
I don't even know if anybody's allowed to catch them, I believe, because they're, I think they're protected
Are
species.
They? Oh, that's interesting. Maybe I'm getting these people into trouble.
But maybe not. I mean, it depends.
They might be allowed to do it. Yeah. Interesting. So those, and you were the last family that actually resided in that house.
That was the last family. It was a year-round residence. There was a furnace in there at one time, and of course, like the houses built at that time, there's a fireplace in every room. And then somewhere at the turn of the 1900s, they put a furnace in there, and you had pipes going through the house.
Yes.
But then when my great-grandfather died, he was the last one that used it year round, and he actually used to commute from Point Fortune to Montreal. He had an office in the Board of Trade building in Montreal and an apartment there, and they put a direct rail line from Point Fortune to Montreal in about 1992, and it ran on that straight line through Rigo until the start of the war when they canceled it.
Okay.
And so we still call that road going up, which is now the interprovincial boundary, the station road, because that's where the station used to be.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But, I mean, this you're talking about stores and box stores before here. All your shopping was done locally. You had Wallone's and Larox, and you had Belil's restaurant, and you had the other Larox restaurant, and the barber, and the
everything,
baker.
Everything. Furniture
even
stores,
had a clothing stores. Even had a funeral parlor and a bank.
Okay.
And of course, everybody met at the post office to pick up the mail.
Yes. Yeah, the story of many, many small towns in Quebec and Ontario. I mean, even Bankley Kill used to be, had four hotels, and on a Friday night, Louise loves to tell us the streets would be, full of farmers.
Saturday night was a big shopping evening in town.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, people would go and get their new suits and get fitted at Matt's Tailors. And,
And I guess we had the hotel there.
Absolutely.
We had the hotel.
Which is Zool's restaurant today.
Yeah. And of course, everybody had a second thing. The guy was the barber, who was also the taxi driver. He also rented boats and sold bait.
So, John, the question I would ask you, I guess, is because we're going to move on to George in a second here to talk about all of the work that has been done to salvage and to try to save this building, such a treasure. How long, I mean, after your family moved away from the building, how long was it sort of left not occupied, which is always hard in a building, right, when there's nobody around to take care of it?
Well, I guess it was, 62 when it was expropriated?
61, 62, I think.
And it was, of course, with the new construction of the dam, and there was big trucks running up and down the edge of the river, and they had stone piled on the front lawn, and they had blasting rocks through the roof.
Really?
Originally, the dam was going to be closer. It was going to be further downstream, and then they ended up putting it sort of over top of the original dam. So, in essence, they didn't have to buy that house. They bought that house and the Coles, the one below. But
they being Quebec Hydro, or who?
Oh, yeah, we're Quebec Hydro.
The people doing
in conjunction with Ontario.
Oh, yes.
They split it, and they have, of course, a number of dams that go across from the Quebec side, the Ontario.
Across the border,
they have the things worked out.
Yes.
They pool the stuff. But they I guess from 62, George, till about what, 1980 or something in that?
Yeah, around about almost 20 years.
Yeah, it was empty, and of course they put a little fence around it, but it became known as a place where the local kids would hang out and go in and have parties, and everything was stripped, doors, you know, moldings, anything that could be moved was taken off the stuff. And I know my mother in 61, 62, when it was taken over, or before that, when the dam was going to come in, said, you know, we'd be happy to turn it over to somebody with the furniture and everything intact, but no, you've got to wait till it's derelict. But then it was taken over. And
would somebody have taken out some of the furniture? And
well, some of the furniture was taken out. Yes, most of the movable stuff was taken out, but there was a stained glass window in the front, and we said, well, you may as well take that out. And they said, no, my mother said, no, you can't take it out. And we don't own it. Of course, a week after we went out, somebody threw a rock through it.
Goodness.
So it's sad.
It was devastated, basically.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And what I think there used to be graffiti, the vampires live here or something inside. But we had it. We had a sort of a special show a couple of years back where all the local residents, came up and went through the house again and gave their experience of the house. And quite a few of the ones said, oh, yeah, when we were young, this used to be the...
They remembered parts of it and stuff.
Absolutely.
And I imagine some local people might have accumulated some of the bits and pieces that were in it.
Well, they might have taken some of the doors and what have you, but most of the furniture we either took... But of course, a lot of the furniture was big scale stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I had my pick of furniture. I have a nice roll-top desk that that had a bookcase on top of it.
Really?
Wow. And of course, we took the bookcase off and turned it upside down, and now it's a cupboard, but I've kept all the pieces.
Yes.
And things like that. Mm-hmm. But there were, 10, 12 foot ceilings in the thing.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, they stripped all the hinges, all of the crane in the downstairs cooking. Fireplace.
Well, they took all the hardware, pots. Well, they took the copper out of the oven.
Frying pans, exactly.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It was all stripped.
Yes, yes.
But now it's coming back.
I was just looking at some of the notes, George, that you sent me here. Ontario Heritage Trust owns the house and has the last word on the changes to it, but the Friends are the operating group that make sure it's open 8 to 9 summer weekends for the general public to learn and enjoy some of Canada's history. You have displays, a tea room, a general store, and members can fill in interesting information about the family that live there, as John has been doing with us, being the last family that resided in the house. But we're going to talk now about some of the projects that have been done to the house, I guess, to save it and to restore it. Let me see now. Under the budget and supervision of Ontario Heritage Trust over the last 25 years, major projects being the riverbank wall, the roof, the windows, the washrooms and basement floor, electrical, floor reinforcement and plaster molding and strengthening, etc. Give us some of the details about that, if you would, George.
Well, there were many projects, but initially what they had to do was seal a house so it would not have access and be vandalized any further.
Yes.
It was probably too late at that point, but they did. They sealed it off. And then with time, they put together a plan to stabilize the bank, because the dam in the spring with the spillways, the new dam, which is the carry-on dam that's there today, has tremendous flow. And the flow was actually cutting into the bank on which the house sat.
Oh, really? Okay.
So in order to prevent any further erosion, what they did was they had to build a very, very large cement wall,
concrete,
right down at the river,
concrete wall.
And that was initially fairly successful, but they had to rebuild part of it because once they had the flow the following year, they realized they didn't reinforce it enough. And apparently they had to do a second bit of construction to reinforce it. But that little project was a $500,000 project, and which would have been nice to have in the house,
yes,
but There wouldn't have been a house
exactly.
had that not been done.
But that's you raise an interesting point, though, because it was the dam that actually caused that. Wouldn't Quebec Hydro or the consortium be sort of responsible for making sure that their project wasn't doing damage to historic properties downriver?
I expect probably the fine print in all those agreements would negate anything a liability on their part. They were asked, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay. And
but,
didn't step up to the plate.
The result was nothing happened.
Yes,
and,
okay.
That we know of.
Yeah. Yes. Ontario Heritage Trust, basically, which is a division of the cultural affairs in Ontario.
Okay.
Through government funding and through their own funding, have provided a lot of leave. Funding for it.
Mm-hmm.
But also during the time of the Friends, we had some very active members.
You've done a lot of fundraising over the years.
Oh,
I know.
Absolutely.
I know.
And
yes.
I mean, there was fundraising that wasn't just selling tea and scones in the tea room or stuff in the general store. There was also donations done by several corporations,
okay.
which helped to provide changes to things like the mortar. Small thing, but again, mm-hmm. degradation, and now that was not due to vandalism, but due to time.
Yes, yes.
So that was
doing some
done.
Tuck pointing and that kind of thing.
And the windows,
for a campaign program.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of.
We've had very good support from local businesses mm-hmm. in the neighborhood.
So broad community support in
exactly,
general.
Because there were no windows left. There were a couple of frames left.
Yes.
So that also sealed everything in.
Okay. And what was the big structural project? Was it last summer or this summer continuing?
Well, during the winter, actually, it was to basically provide public access, engineered approval for public access. I mean, the house had been open for the last 22 years to the general public.
So public access already existed.
It was there.
Yeah. We'd field tested it for several years.
Exactly. But then we had a mechanical engineer come in and check it. You would have thought this might have been
structural
at the beginning, but it wasn't.
Structural engineer?
No, structural engineer, yeah. I guess. And I think he was a mechanical engineer.
From the results,
but,
yeah.
But he maintained that there were some shortfalls and allowing it to meet the bylaws for public access.
So some concerns if more than 20 or 30 people gathered there, kind of thing,
correct.
I suppose.
Well,
yeah.
And anyway, as a result of that, what they did this past winter was remove the floor in a couple of the upstairs rooms, one being the ballroom, which is the sort of the pièce de résistance of the house.
The biggest open area.
The big room.
Okay, yes.
On the second floor.
Okay.
And one of the bedrooms, which we call the Williamson bedroom, and basically they tied in the floor joists to the wall. They actually anchored the stones to the floor joists using steel strapping and anchor bolts.
Okay.
So the people that did it were very, very good, and they removed every board. They actually numbered every board, took them off, did the work, put it all back, and all you can see is one cut line on the floor. So it was a very, very good job.
Amazing.
Aside from that, what they did was, there was a gentleman who's an expert at plastering, and he reinforced a lot of the molding in the ballroom area, because molding was actually, with every year, heat and cold, it was starting to fall down.
Yes, yes.
So a lot of that was done.
And this would be traditional, as you say, plaster and lath.
That's right. And that's part of the preservation aspect of the Ontario Heritage Trust.
Yes.
Part of this house is to be maintained the way it was and to keep it so that people can actually see what a house looked like in 1870.
How it was back then, as much as possible, as you say.
As much as possible.
But sometimes you have to make compromises.
Oh, absolutely. And there's been plenty of those. I mean, in the basement, we've got two lovely washrooms and a radiant floor of concrete.
Oh,
which,
really?
For half of it.
Very, very comfortable.
Yeah, as I told you, that ran right up until the Friends came in with no electricity, no running water. No.
Wow, amazing.
The electricity was first put in basically just for safety so that people could find their way around, because it can be dark in there when the sun goes behind the cloud.
Yes, okay, interesting.
But so those were, you know, some of the major projects, and the result is today we have not complete, but certainly much improved over what it was in its original state. a gem of history in this area that people can visit, and the friends are there to help provide any answers to any questions, or hopefully, if we don't know the answer, we'll come up with an answer.
Yes. Make something up on the spot if you have to. Or find out who knows, obviously.
Well, that too.
We're talking to John Redfern and George Henderson. They are the co-presidents of the Friends of the McDonnell Williamson House. John is co-president of the Quebec chapter, I guess, and George the Ontario chapter. And they've been filling us in a little bit on the history and what it was like to live in the house, actually, from John's perspective. Really interesting stuff. And George was giving us some details of some of the refurbishing and restructuring and strengthening of the house and making it capable of actually having public access. So that brings us to how I wanted to wrap up our chat today, guys. Giving us an idea of what's going to be going on at the MacDo House this summer.
Well, basically, every summer for about the last 22 or 23 years, John, we've had summer programming going on. We're open on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday, from 11 to 5. We have the general store, as you'd mentioned earlier, Jan.
Yeah.
We have the tea room where you can get tea and scones and clotted cream and homemade jam.
All the traditional stuff.
The store has many different things. There's something for everybody, from buttons to bows, literally, and books to flatware and dishes. And also, the whole house is open for tours. Tours are either auto-guided or yourself self-guided, if you wish, or if you wait and get a group, a couple of people, then we'll give you somebody will try and give you a tour. So
one of the friends will step up and
we'll try and step up to the plate
and give a personal tour there.
That's it. Yeah, and we'll excellent. Tell you some stories that, whether you believe them or not, will be entertaining. So this summer we're open the first weekend starting the 4th and 5th of July, and we're going to have our grand reopening, since it was closed last summer for the first time in about 22 years.
Yes.
There'll be more to come on that. The information is will be available on the website.
Yes.
And right. Louise will give you
right.
the website.
We usually do a couple of pages in the review too at the end of June, and we have the full lineup for July and August, because sometimes every Saturday and Sunday afternoon, there's special things going on. But people can wait for that or visit mwhouse.ca to see the full schedule. I know in the past you've had crocheting workshops, there's been quilting, there's been ice cream making,
wine making,
corn
yeah.
boil, wine making, all kinds of talks, and
old-time
just
fiddlers,
and just and entertainment too, not to be short on that. And one more quick thing, there's a beautiful heritage garden there, if I recall, and because it's a kind of a gardening show, I'll put in a plug for that, and I know that it's just outside that side door there. So I don't know if you've been weeding in that or keeping that up to date.
Well, it's always a problem. We're always looking for more volunteers.
Maybe I should go and volunteer to do that.
So we're changing it a bit around.
We are.
And with the year off.
With everything, you find out what you can do, where your strengths are. So.
But it's a great place for a picnic lunch and a
beautiful,
beautiful spot.
Absolutely. There's picnic tables outside. Great spot to be,
right beside
the river.
Right on the river there, a beautiful view.
Exactly.
Outside of the regular weekends, we do have sometimes bus tours. Special groups can organize private tours ahead of the summer and sometimes after the summer.
Right.
And we have one coming in June the 5th, another one on the 15th. The 5th is the Quebec Historical Society.
Oh, yes.
And then on the 15th, the people from Fulford Place in Rockville.
That's a beautiful venue.
They're coming
too.
Okay.
So they just want to see it.
We've had a wedding there.
Yes, we
excellent.
Have. We'd like to have more.
The other thing to mention is you're right next to the ferry across, that goes back and forth across from the Quebec
absolutely.
To the Ontario
right.
side. Yeah. So
many
that's
of our guests are people that are traveling from Montreal through to Carillon, coming across the ferry, and then going back to Montreal.
Yeah.
On the 40, Highway 40 side of the river.
So a great visit would be, a great day trip would be to visit the McDonnell Williamson House in the morning and then go across the river to the Argenteuil Museum.
Absolutely.
The old barracks across the river there. And
the Lockmaster's House, which is a National Historic Site also.
Another great spot to visit.
And then continue on up the Quebec side, back towards Hawkesbury and Ottawa. That's the other route. There's two routes, two major cities, and we're halfway in between, more or less.
Really convenient.
During this close down of the house, after it was taken over, before it was opened, a lot of the stuff from the house was over at Argentine Museum.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, I want to thank both of you, John Redfern and George Henderson. Thanks for coming in and giving us an update on how the upkeep of the house has been coming and the restorations and also the history and that kind of thing. It was really interesting, and I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you very much for having us. Thank you for the boost,
and thank you for the plugs in the review.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely, always. And we hope to see you there this summer.
You will.
Yeah, certainly we'll be out there. Thanks again, guys.